the end result of all of that psychoanalysis is ultimately, I accept myself as I am. But that can take 25, 30 years. I know people who've done psychoanalysis for that long and knew everything about their problems and their situations, but still had them. So this is a completely different way of positioning yourself. You're not working out your problems and you're not trying to improve or fix yourself. You're simply accepting yourself on the deepest level possible. And once you love yourself on that level, then and only then, do you have a chance or a possibility of extending that love truly to another.
Welcome to Salish Wolf, a podcast bringing you inspirational stories of extraordinary endeavors. I am your host, Todd Howard. Just south of my Vancouver Island home is a tiny archipelago on which for nearly a decade lived a most astonishing animal, a lone wolf. Takea, as he would be named, survived and thrived in an environment where likely no wolf had ever set foot. In the process, he captured the hearts of a community and showed us even the most unlikely is possible. His story is not dissimilar to those of the individuals interviewed on this podcast. At some point, they each had to turn to their inner lone wolf. From there, they were able to lead and inspire. My intention is to share their journeys to help you discover your own inner greatness and peace. This podcast is brought to you by Anchor Point Expeditions, where I provide life-changing personal leadership retreats for men, coaching, and other valuable personal growth resources. Visit anchorpointexpeditions.com to see where your journey could take you. This is the second part of a riveting interview with the remarkable and wise shamanic healer, Darpan. We pick up in this episode right where we left off in episode 37. Darpan wastes no time taking us into his vision for a more harmonious future in which we pry off the shackles of guilt, shame, and fear and emerge into the freedom of the healing power of love. This isn't just a far-fetched kumbaya utopia that he is offering, but a realistic and attainable path forward that begins with the transformation of each of us personally. And he lays out the tools and benchmarks that we can apply to our individual journeys. We explore many contentious topics in this episode, including the injurious concepts of original sin and settler's guilt, the fear-mongering propaganda of a controversial pandemic, and the ancestral shame that society affixes so incessantly to our psyche that perhaps only love and forgiveness will allow us to shed the labels that are rendering us incompatible with fellow human beings on this planet, and at times, even with ourselves. As Eckhart Tolle demonstrates, there is an undeniable healing power of living consciously in the now. Darpan explores the virtue of human consciousness and how conscious communities can help restore our relations, bridging chasms that have been carved by our departure from living in the moment in exchange for technology that leaves us bereft of genuine connection. This is a powerful episode that can help guide us back to small and large-scale communities that will thrive on that which unites us, our collective humanity. Welcome to A New Vision Forward on this episode of Salish Wolf with Darpan.
Because once I saw where this medicine was going, she showed me in one of those downloads, in that 3-month download, where this was going and that she was coming to facilitate a major shift of consciousness in the human family. And once I saw that, and she gave me a finite experience of what that shift in consciousness is going to be like. It was actually an experience of a unified field. It was a state of oneness, a state of where everything is perfect, just as it is. And it was a state of bliss. And it was a state of like, nothing needs to be added. Everything is absolutely perfect, just as it is. It was so satisfying, so fulfilling. I felt so connected. There was no sense of any alienation. It was absolutely connected, knowing that you are part of the whole and you are the whole. I am it. It is I. That kind of an experience. Then I went, okay, if that's where you're going, if that's where you're leading us all, I'm in. My hands, this body, mind, these boots, I'm in, boots and all. You know, just give me the next step. I don't need to know how we're going to get there. Now that you've shown me where we're going, I don't need to know how we get there. That's your business. Just give me the next step and I'll do that to the best of my ability. And when I look back on the last 28 years, I would never have had the imagination or the temerity or the courage to invent such a path. I've like the path that has unfolded for me has been so magical and so amazing, I would never have had the capacity to imagine it. The people that I've been blessed to meet along the path, the incredible beings and the sanghas and the communities that I've been, you know, fortunate to be a part of, incredible. I could never have imagined that. It wasn't in my capacity as a 40-year-old to think of those things or even to imagine a path like this. So it's like having a cosmic coordinator now. I no longer plan things. I just get out of the way. Not my will, but thy will be done. So it's like fifth dimensional awareness coming through in the guise of ayahuasca, in the personality of ayahuasca, but it is fifth dimensional awareness, that unified field of consciousness in ingressing itself into this third dimensional plane. And that is what the shift of consciousness is all about. All we need to do is anchor these energies, to hold these energies, to be willing conduits to anchor this. That's all that's needed, is willingness. And then existence will do the rest. If you like, ayahuasca will do the rest. But it's not just ayahuasca that's doing this. Ayahuasca is a very visible modality on the planet today that is shifting consciousness in a big way. But there are many, many other modalities that are doing the same thing, which is all part of that same evolutionary push that we're actually right in the middle of right now. And at the moment, we're in a very dark chapter because one needs to go through the dark and go through that big purge that one does with ayahuasca and to release all that is no longer useful or that is past its use-by date, frequencies that are no longer congruent with what is ingressing down right now, have to be released. And so on the planet, that's what we're seeing with all these lockdowns and things. We're seeing it's like a dark chapter, but we need to see the darkness. We need to see all of this shit that we've been dealing with and that we've been holding and somehow unconsciously accepting or acquiescing to, and needs to be seen in the full bright light of day. You know, it's just as an ayahuasca, you need to see all of the traumas, all of the things that happened as a way of releasing them. And it's generally through the form of a purge. And I believe that what's happening on the planet today is a kind of a massive purification, even though it doesn't look like that right now, and that it is a part of this purge. And that this is a momentary phase that we're going through. This too shall pass, because what's coming for human beings is so magnificent that it's hard to put into words right now. It's like, it's as big as trying to tell a caterpillar about its destiny as a butterfly. The caterpillar has no fucking idea and it would have no conception of that. So trying to tell people about what's coming is very difficult because people cannot see past the restrictions and the dark nature of what we're experiencing collectively at this time. But any initiation worth its salt requires that you face your imminent or possible demise. Like and what we're seeing is the fear of annihilation, the fear of the virus, the fear of this, the fear of that. Basically, it comes down to fear of annihilation. And it comes down to a very specific annihilation of the ego, of the personality, the part that thinks you are it. That fictitious creation is deathly afraid of annihilation. Once you truly surrender to the death rebirth process, you realize that you cannot die. You are immortal, you are eternal, you are infinite, and that every death is followed by rebirth. It's just the way of the universe. That's the way it goes. And so we need to surrender to that essence of that we truly are, the very thing that animates my voice right now, the very thing that animates my movement, my presence here, is the I that I'm referring to that will be reborn. But the ego, the one that thinks it's in control of the show, the one that's trying to run the show, and if you turn on the news, all you're seeing is a massive ego or an insane mind running amok. And this is the part that is deathly afraid of being annihilated, and with good reason. Because it is about to be annihilated. If not annihilated, put into its rightful place. Because ego needs to acknowledge spirit. If you ask any shaman in the indigenous cultures, what is the malaise of the West? What is the sickness that the West is experiencing? They'll simply say, the West has lost contact with spirit. They've been so kind of, you know, hypnotized by matter and by technology that they no longer feel spirit. And this is the awful alienation, the cause for all the depressions, the cause for all of the sickness and the suicides and the and the misery that people are feeling in the West, and the alienation and the sense of loss of purpose, is exactly that. It's just a loss of connection to spirit. And so what is happening and what ayahuasca is doing is inviting people back into the garden that they were so unceremoniously booted out of by a jealous and fearful God in our kind of like metaphorical Genesis, literally the biblical idea of Adam and Eve being thrown out of the garden because they ate of the tree of knowledge and of good and evil, is exactly that same tree that's inviting us back into the garden. And to look at that whole hoax that happened, that alienation, that separation that happened. You know, I was born a Catholic and I was born with original sin. You know what that means? That means I inherited from Adam and Eve that sin of eating that apple, and that I'm forever damned unless I am redeemed. So this is a very deep psychological complex that's embedded deeply in our, not just in our society, but in our collective unconscious. And this is what's being transformed right now. This is what's being superseded. The old paradigm is just falling away, like sloughing off of an old skin, and something new is being reborn. And this is so magical and so exciting. And those of us who can feel it, know it, even though we don't know how it's going to look or how it's, but we can feel this process. And all we need to do is trust this process. And this is what the teaching of ayahuasca has been. When you drink ayahuasca, you have to trust the process. And it's a humbling experience to the ego often. And it's one in which you are kind of die and reborn. So this is an ancient perennial initiation that has been kept sequestered generally in the realms of mystery schools, but that we are all collectively going through on a global scale right now. One could see it as a metaphor like that of death and rebirth.
Wow. I just have so many things that I want to say. I'm taking notes, so I'll try to get through them. I want to come back to conscious community. You just mentioned original sin, so I'm going to touch on that for a second. Today we have, at least here in Canada, what's called settler's guilt, which is being taught to elementary school age children who are white, of course. And if you're white, you need to carry guilt for the conquest of your settlers. And just like the original sin, like, this is a heavy burden that we're putting on our youth to carry. And any negative impetus such as that is not going to have a positive outcome. Never.
I absolutely concur. It's what I call, it's a black magic spell. It's putting a sense of it's inducing people to feel bad about themselves. It's diminishing their sense of self-worth. And it is disempowering the people who take on that belief. Look, the very cornerstone of the Catholic tradition is based upon shame and guilt.
Yes.
First, through original sin, as I just mentioned. Secondly, through the alienation of the body and spirit. Like, even though the body has feelings of sexuality and healthy feelings of, you know, that's a sin. And so you have these feelings, but you think, I can't have these feelings. So it sets up this tension within the mind where you're trying to repress something that is absolutely natural. And what's the result of that? Schizophrenic behavior, kind of, you know, in the sense of like, you're not really coming from a whole place. You're divided. And when you are divided, you can be controlled. And so this has been the whole strategy of the Roman Catholic Church. And we've got to remember, it was established at the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century AD by Constantine, who was the emperor of Rome at that time, deciding to use the Christian religion as the main state religion, thereby bringing the state and the political leadership together in one institution of what I call the unholy mafia of the mind, where from that state they could control people through the marriage of religion and politics to, you know, basically make people, political thing was, you know, the Justice Department, all of that, you know, punishment, crime and punishment and all of that. But the mafia of the mind goes much more insidious on a spiritual level with these beliefs of unworthiness and disempowerment. And this is how people have maintained their control, how the priest, what I call the priests and the politicians, I call them the unholy mafia of the mind. They are the ones throughout history who have sequestered these conceptual realities as prisons for people to feel bad within. You're caused to feel bad. You feel bad about yourself. You feel guilty. You feel like you've done something wrong. You know, the original sin is designed to make you feel like that. And, you know, when you think about it, like I've done a lot of work with people, therapeutic work. I've done a lot of, work like with Tantra and with primal issues. And what I've found is that most emotions are really beautiful to express and to share. But there are two emotions that I find absolutely useless. They are completely useless. And guilt is one of them. Shame is the other. For example, if you feel guilty about having done something to somebody, like in this case, the Indigenous people, you've made to feel guilty about that, that guilt does not hurt the person who's supposedly the victim. And it certainly doesn't help the person who's supposedly the perpetrator. It just expands and multiplies that knot of feeling unworthy in both parties. And therefore, it's a completely useless emotion. It doesn't help anybody. It just compounds the issue so more bad feelings can result, and for both parties. And that's why I call it a magic, black magic spell. It's a constriction upon consciousness. It's a limitation. It's a prison within which you're put, unless you can get yourself out, and which is subject to those conditions. That's why all these feelings like guilt and shame proliferate on the planet right now.
It's like the vogue thing to do right now, to identify with your settler's guilt and define yourself by it. Websites, bios, social media profiles, they now begin with a testament of this guilt. As our friend Dan Reed says, every thought, feeling, and action that is negative leaves behind a negative imprint. And if you are doing an action to alleviate your guilt and shame, and only for that reason, that's a negative catalyst. It's going to have a negative outcome.
I could not agree more. It's sad. It hurts me to hear this. And yet it's happening, not just in Canada, in many places. This sense of guilt, of, you know, shame, of trying to, as if that would make things right. Look, if it really made things right, I'd be all for it. But sadly, it doesn't. It just compounds the issue of unworthiness and disempowerment. And this is awful. This is a dreadful condition to place upon human consciousness.
It's creating the victim culture. And absolutely, now everyone is victimized, and we're turning to our priests, politicians, and I'll throw in a third P, the propaganda of media, to give us guidance, because we've lost our own inner compass.
I couldn't put it better. That's it. Yes, you just hit the nail on the head. That's it. And it's a sad state of affairs that we're witnessing this. But as I say, it all comes under the umbrella of the kind of shadow aspect of ourselves collectively that we need to look at. And this shadow aspect is actually being touted and presented as a really good thing. It's like the New Green Deal and so many other things they present that kind of sounds good, but at its heart, if you look at it, it's yet another tool for disempowerment and for creating lack of self-worth in people. And this is exactly the opposite of what is actually occurring on this planet right now. What is occurring on this planet right now is a vast new energies are starting to enter this field. And these energies are being feared, and these people who are in the control brokers on the planet are desperate right now to push their agenda, because they know that unless they push it now and get everybody in the corral of this post-Orwellian dystopian state that they have in mind for everybody, then it's going to be too late, because too many people are waking up right now. And so that's why they're putting everything to bear to this. And this is one of the tools of how they do it. It's social engineering. It's a way of conditioning people to get a certain desired behavioral response. But it is conditioning, and it's erroneous conditioning, because anything that creates fear or disempowerment or lack of self-worth, in my mind, is black magic. If you want to put it that way, you know, because it's disempowering people. It's causing them to feel bad. It's causing them to feel you're harming people. But they don't see it that way. They think this is the right thing to do. And of course, it's warped. Everything is upside down that we're seeing right now. It really is upside down and the wrong way around. We're living in a very incredible period of our historical unfolding. It's It's the deepest part of Kali Yuga that we're in right now. But it's about to change big time. It's about to shift. And this is what these people fear the most, is that people are starting to wake up. They're naturally starting to wake up and naturally starting to unfold to realize, who am I? What is my purpose? What am I here for? Of course, the vast majority on the planet are not in that state yet. But very closely, if we get critical mass, just enough people who are vibrating at that frequency, all that other vast majority will start to get on the natch, just like that, just as in the 100th monkey story. And this is what my entire dedication of my life to this work is all about. It's not about converting anybody or getting numbers. It's about simply creating critical mass. And critical mass, once it's reached, and believe me, we're getting close, if not already there, it will start to catalyze a cascading effect, a rippling effect through the human collective consciousness. And this is what we're working towards. And this is what these people who have temporal control, in other words, they own all the money, the geography, the armies, the media, all that, sure, they own all of that. But these people are not able to control what is coming down, which is coming down from a fifth dimensional level, which is this notion of a unified field. It's a notion of all being one, that we are all part of the one and the same thing. It's like Chief Seattle when he said, what you do to one part of the web is felt in the other part of the web. The Red Indians and the Indigenous peoples were aware of this. This is why they showed respect towards nature and respect to other beings. But we in the West have become alienated from spirit, and therefore we can perform the heinous and dreadful crimes against nature and even indeed ourselves and not even be aware of it. How could you kill the lungs of the earth, you know, exploit all of the rainforests on the planet, not be realizing what you're doing? You know, this is childlike. This is like really basic. And yet these people have immense power. And they appear to be very sophisticated and very clever and very scientific and very technological. But yes, they are. They're masters on the fourth and the third dimensional plane. But those planes are still dualistic in nature. They know nothing about the unified field. And as it comes down, it's going to throw them into a panic, because these people are really only a very small amount of people against 8 billion people on the planet. And so these people are all doing it by bluff, through the media, through fear, through hitting people's fear base. They're using everything they have right now, pulling out all stops, which to me shows desperation. And what they're afraid of is this new notion of service to the one and all, because those people are firmly in the camp of service to self. That's why they've got billions of dollars. That's why they have immense power. That's why they've created the kind of, you know, templates and the kind of, immense corporations that they do own. But it's just on that level of duality. What is about to be birthed on this planet is something of a non-dual nature, something that is non-dual awareness. And this is the great gift that we are being gifted, because it's just coming to the end of the processional cycle where these energies are coming through. Just as our Earth moves around the sun, our very solar system moves around the central sun of Alcyone in the Pleiades as it traverses its way around the Milky Way, which takes 26,000 years. And guess what? We're coming to the end of that right now. And so there's a massive gift, a payoff of that, when the blinkers will be taken away and our full potential as human beings is really about to happen. And so this whole 5G frequency network and the kind of ideas that are being touted and the whole virus idea is a way of screening those cosmic energies that are coming down from the planet right now, which is part of a very natural cosmic cycle.
Yeah. Well, it's the unity, as you speak of. They don't want the unity. They don't want the unification.
No.
And as you said, they are very clever and they've managed to disable, or they're attempting to disable, that unification movement, I think, yes, through the uses of labels, because the more we are labeled, the more we are divided. And they continue to create new terminology and spread that through propaganda, through the media narrative of us against them. And it even, you mentioned the term awakening. This is a great awakening and people are waking up. I think they've even co-opted the term awakening by having now the new woke, and the new woke is the far left, and the far left is anathema to the far right, and therefore we have to hate each other because we're entirely different and we can't get along. We're only focusing on what divides us as opposed to what unites us.
You're so right. And this is the way they do it. They're very clever in the use of language. What they're doing is hypnosis. I've studied hypnosis for many years. I am a hypnotherapist. I know what they're doing on the global level, like what you're just saying, taking the energy out of something that has real energy and then using it or utilizing that for their own purposes. It was the same. You remember when John Lennon came out with "Power to the People" years ago in the 60s, and it was a very potent rallying point to bring people together. What did the establishment do? It took that phrase and then did a big billboard with a Bowser, a petrol thing going into a car going, "Power to the People." Immediately just taking all of the energy, all the psychic energy out of that phrase. And you're quite right when you say they use things like the woke movement to try and drag the energy out of the awakening, the psychic energy that is there, and a way of neutralizing it. That's what the system does. Any threat to the system, it tries to neutralize it. But there's this thing called the theory of dissipating structures. I think it was Carl Pribram or maybe somebody else who came with that. You know, anyway, the idea is that when a structure is kind of a rebellious thing that's going against the system absorbs it. But if that rebellious thing grows and grows and grows, it becomes untenable for the system to hold it. The whole system dissipates and reorganizes on a higher level. And I believe this is exactly what we're going through in this shift of consciousness. It's really a theory of it conforms to the theory of dissipating structures in the sense that this movement will overwhelm the system, and the system is trying its hardest to stop that. But at a certain point, it will dissipate and reorganize on a higher level. And I think it's inevitable. And certainly in the visionary states that I've seen, it's an absolute reality. I can't prove that. But I live my life knowing that. I live my life as if that's already happened, even though I'm aware that I'm in the manifested illusion of this whole lockdown, pandemic, et cetera, and the whole reality of vaccines. That's all going on, but I don't let it affect my frequency. I'm holding the frequency of the new world. I'm holding the frequency of bringing heaven to earth, literally ingressing those higher frequencies and anchoring them through my own being, through consciously accepting that into this earth. And I think that every human being alive is going to have to make that personal decision, the decision to either go into fear or to choose love. It's simple binary choice. Am I choosing love or fear? And this is a choice, even if people don't want to make that choice, by not making the choice, you are making that choice. It's inescapable. And everybody will have to face that in some way inside of themselves. And at some point, people are just going to go, well, I'm afraid, but I'm going to choose love. I'm going to feel the fear and choose love anyway. Others will go, I feel the fear, I'm going to choose fear. I'm going to get vaccinated. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do whatever I can to take away so I can go back to normal. Just such a ridiculous notion. You know, it's such a phrase, the whole build back better, you know. It's just hypnosis. They keep repeating the same phrase over and over again. It's social engineering on the most vast scale that we've ever seen. It makes Joseph Mengele and Hitler look like an amateur. It's really like that from where I see it. It's vast social engineering. We're being conditioned or brainwashed, if you like, into new modes of behavior that we would normally in our right minds never choose. But we're choosing it out of fear and out of coercion and out of acquiescence. People simply give their power away. If people were to stop giving their power away, the whole thing would fall down. But people are afraid and they feel that they don't have the authority within themselves to make their own decisions. So they're still holding on, clutching to that childlike status. Instead of growing up into becoming a conscious custodian to this beautiful planet in the far-flung reaches of the Milky Way, we are so blessed and such an incredible planet full of life to see ourselves as citizens of planet Earth, not as an American or a Canadian or these imaginary lines drawn on a map over which people argue and fight and kill and maim. And, you know, like it has to be a completely new consciousness that we are conscious custodians, that we are citizens of planet Earth, that we are part of Gaia. We're not separate. We're just walking, talking, cogitating, thinking aspects of that one being called Gaia, who is going through a massive transformation, as big as, say, a child that's going through puberty, that kind of a shift. So it's not just human beings, it's the entire planet that's going through a major, Some people call it an ascension, but I don't like that word. It's a bandied about term that has too much baggage around it. But I do see transformation on this planet, absolutely.
And I want to acknowledge, too, the people who are motivated by fear and recognize that that's understandable with what's going on in the world, with the propaganda that we're being fed, with the lies that our politicians continue to tell us. These are the people, in some cases, we elected to lead us, who are now turning around and basically taking away all of our human rights. And I can understand why people are scared. And when I'm walking on a trail in the forest and I cross paths with someone and they nearly fall getting out of my way so they can get out of my airspace, I really feel for them. I really do, because
yes,
they have been, to use the term, brainwashed into thinking that humans are dangerous. Interaction is bad. And I really grieve for our children more than anything.
Because I do too. The children that I feel most sad about, because they're being subjected to abusive behaviors, being separated, wearing these fucking face nappies, you know, not being able to see each other's expressions, not being able to communicate, separating, it causes sickness. I remember when I was studying psychology, they did an experiment on chimpanzees. And one chimpanzee had its mom and it was cuddling and, you know, touching and hanging out, playing. And it grew up to be a really, really healthy chimpanzee. The other one was isolated. It was given a surrogate mother, a little kind of like wire
stuffing
thing with some fur on it. Yeah, stuffing that it could hold onto. But this monkey, this chimpanzee became stunted in growth, retarded. It was physically deformed. It got small. And it was obvious that it was lack of touch and alienation from the tribe and despair, fear, you know, that created these really adverse effects in the development of this particular chimpanzee. And humans are no different. Humans are exactly the same. So it's a diabolical plan when you really look at it, you know, separating people, especially for children, and not being able to go to school and not being able to play, not being able, it's really, really off. And I'm really surprised that nobody's seeing this, that people are not going, what the fuck, oh, excuse my language, but what the hell's going on? You know, like, why are we allowing this?
Well, people are seeing it.
Yeah, people are. I always maintain that the higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his ass. And that's what's happening right now.
In a sense, it's similar to what we did with our indigenous peoples and how we basically separated them from their ancestors, from their elders. And so there was no tangible communication or connection. We're doing the same thing right now. And we say that we're taking all these measures to protect the elderly, which it's not. And what we're having is we're having our youth being completely separated from their elders. They're not even getting a chance to meet them in some case. We have children born into this world whose grandparents or great-grandparents, they're not even getting to meet because they're seen as dangerous. No, these two, the elders and the youth, they can't blend together. So we're really cutting cultural ties again. We're basically cutting the chain that is connecting the ancestral path that weaves through all of us. And it's truly diabolical. And I do hope more and more people wake up to see that we've got to come back to, as you said, love.
It's no different from that kind of cultural ring barking I was talking about earlier that happened to the Aboriginal people, just in a more subtle way and in a more kind of like, in a way that's sort of like feel good. You know what I mean? So they actually, there are in Australia, you have the situation where people who were locked down in Victoria for 9 months were actually thanking the premier of that state for being so, keeping us safe. And in other words, they were praising their jailer. And this is what people do. They just cannot see beyond it because of the fear that is keeping them constricted within a certain blinkered viewpoint. And then they project that onto everything, because what better enemy than an invisible virus that you cannot see, cannot touch, cannot measure? It could be anywhere. You know, like it could be here. My God. And people's minds get a hold of that and just go berserk.
It's Stockholm syndrome. As you said, we're idolizing these politicians, these medical so-called experts who are making the most asinine calls and decisions.
That's right. So it is, as you say, it's a really, it's the darkest chapter we've ever gone into as in our historical process. But at the same time, I see it as necessary. We need to move through this. So I don't see it as bad, inverted commas. It's tragic that human beings have allowed, can allow or sanction that kind of behavior, because if people were awake, there's no way this would happen. But in the process of waking up, one needs a big Zen stick, because people will not wake up of their own accord. If people woke up to their own accord, we wouldn't be going through this right now. We'd be entering into that new era pain-free. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if people are still massively asleep, one needs to be woken up. And it's like the mother, it's like ayahuasca. It uses a Zen stick and it uses a feather. It can use either, you know, like depending upon where you're at. Sometimes you need the feather and sometimes you need the stick to wake up. It doesn't matter in the end, whatever what works to wake you up. It's a situation where people are kind of going through what they need to go through.
Yeah. It's almost like a global ayahuasca journey right here. We drank the brew. We know something's coming. We didn't know what it was. Then we go through the dark. Then we got a purge. And then we come out the other side and we have this beautiful, hopefully, lesson and takeaway from the experience. An elevation of consciousness in the process.
I do see it that way. I absolutely see it that way too. And that gives you hope. No, more than hope. It gives you the firmness to go through this, firmeza. It also gives you the certainty of what's coming at the end. And that's confidence. All we need to have is confidence in what's coming and see the bigger picture to be able to traverse the valley of death or the dark shadowy realms that we're going into right now. If you know what's coming, it allows you to walk with confidence through the shadow of death, where that psalm comes from. Yea, though I walk through the valley of death, the Lord is my shepherd, the Lord is my light. Indeed, if you can be a light unto yourself, you will not be touched by the projection of shadow that is going to be abundantly spread throughout our collective consciousness. So I think that it's really important to have that bigger perspective. And part of the work that I want to get into now is reminding people of that larger perspective, not to lose their firmness, to stay firm, and to not be swayed by lower emotions like fear and anxiety. Or if you have them, to have them, not deny them. Look, when I was an actor going on stage, you always feel really afraid just before you went on stage, but you didn't let that stop you. You allowed the fear to be present and your intention was, I'm going out to play that character. And when you go out to play that character, suddenly all that fear you felt before you walked on stage is suddenly available as usable energy because you didn't acquiesce to the fear. If you had acquiesced to the fear, you would go, oh, I can't go on stage. You'd probably dry or forget your lines or whatever. So it's really a choice. Again, it doesn't mean people don't feel fear. We all feel fear. But it's our relationship to fear that is really important. And I think Joseph Campbell, in his kind of extrapolation of the hero's journey, was really clear about that when he said that the only difference between the hero and the coward is that the hero does it, whatever it is, the challenge, you know, the quest, whatever. Because the hero feels fear too. But the hero goes, I feel fear, but this is my intention. I'm going to follow my intention. And then all of that energy becomes usable energy to overcome massive obstacles on that quest. But if you get stymied by the fear and acquiesce to the fear, then you don't even get to take step one. You just remain locked in that cage of fear. And so this is a very good analogy for what's happening collectively on the planet today. As you said earlier, there's a lot of compassion we have to have for people who are going through a lot of fear. Because let's face it, it's a real and visceral kind of entity on this planet right now. So it's not about saying, oh, don't feel it. That's ridiculous to feel it. We all feel it. So feel it, but absolutely keep walking and don't be acquiesced to it. Simply see it as an energy, locked up energy source that if you continue following your intention, it will unlock that energy and become a useful resource, which is the hero's secret. On the hero's journey is that he unlocks that energy and is able to overcome massive obstacles in order to fulfill the quest. So this is what we are in, that similar situation collectively. And there are those who will acquiesce to the fear, and there are those who will feel the fear and still follow their intention. And there are those who've had a visceral experience of what's coming, who will absolutely feel no fear and just do everything in their power to assist the manifestation of heaven on earth, of creating those higher frequencies and anchoring them on this earth, which is going to happen. In my vision, there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. And it's not even in my mind, it's in my heart. I feel it, I see it. And that's what motivates me moment by moment in life. And I see a lot of people struggling with fear. So I'd like to help, or in some way assist people who are on that borderline of struggling with fear, to just help them to let go. Just as the ayahuasca, in an ayahuasca ceremony, my job as a shaman is to help people to let go of their fear, to surrender to the process and to simply let go, and to offer up whatever feelings, including fear, are there, to surrender to the process. And that is indeed fulfillment of the transformation. That's the one essential ingredient, is willingness to let go, to surrender, to go with it. This is all that's required. You know, you don't have to do anything. You just have to be willing to allow the process to take place. And more human beings are coming to that place. More and more people are starting to see the lies and the manifested illusion. And that's the culmination of thousands of years. It's not just overnight that this is suddenly manifested here. But more and more people see that, and it's the very thing. So the very poison, if you like, to try and control people, may be the very thing that catalyzes people into awakening. So this is where I say that the devil knows not for whom he works. Even the Bill Gateses of the world and the sort of people who seem to be pushing this whole agenda are part of it, are part of this great awakening. And they play their role in the alchemical crucible of changing one form to another form, whether it be lead to gold or carbon to diamond, or in the case of humans, from lower dense consciousness to light consciousness. Great forces are needed to be brought to bear, great opposing forces, a lot of heat and cold and pressure and, you know, incredible energies to be brought to bear to bridge the polarity gap into experiencing the unified field. So it's not about choosing one or the other, it's about bridging the polarity gap into a unified experience of oneness, wherein which the polarity can still dance. It can still exist within that, but the very quality of our experience is fundamentally changed by it, by bridging that polarity gap. And I believe that's what's happening. That's what I feel is the process that we're going through, which is not dissimilar to an ayahuasca session, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Well said. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
We struck and shred our hour upon it. It's all been so important. But actually, in the end, means nothing. You know? It's only this present now. That's it. All other meaning is what we overlay upon it.
This has been amazing. We're 2 hours in, and we probably should start working towards a wrap up. I think we've talked a fair bit about conscious community and your vision for that. Can you talk a bit about what a new vision is that you are unfolding via your courses and your work with people?
The vision is to embrace our wholeness, our vulnerability, to embrace our totality, and to be brave and enough to show that to the world, to be transparent, to be honest, to the way ayahuasca teaches. Is very, it's not like hugely intellectual, or you need some sort of prior information to understand it. It's so elegant and simple, as all great truth is, in fact, that any child could understand it. It's just the giving and sharing of love. It's being present with this moment. It's being fully present, not just locked into the future, projection to the future, or remembering the past, which is what we're primarily doing in our normal waking consciousness. But when one can be totally present and in this now, right now, then one embraces eternity. It's an eternal now that is now. Even when we go through the physical death process, it'll just be another now that we experience. And that now is omnipresent, and that's all there actually is. Everything else is an overlay of mind or mind projection of into the future, or looking back into the past, or projecting fear, which are all limitations and all attenuate our present experience. So as we learn to relax those projections, and as we learn to embrace ourselves, warts and all, dysfunctionalities and all, as we learn to embrace ourselves and love ourselves, no matter what, exactly as we are, no changes. One doesn't need to improve how one is. One needs to just have the courage to accept ourselves as we are with love. And all that is unnecessary will naturally fall away. Because if you're not feeling the fear, the taproot of fear of dying, of death, of annihilation, then all of the other little branches and leaves that were depending upon that, being fed by that fear, will simply atrophy in the presence of this present moment. And so in the groups that we do, our retreats and stuff, I try to engender that frequency of love, of acceptance, of deep acceptance of oneself, and to allow the possibility that I'm okay as I am, and then to be able to be seen in that way. That's a very important step, transparency. So my vision of the future as we live our lives now, is to be utterly transparent, open, honest, available, here, giving love, sharing love, just doing the ordinary, beautiful human things that we do, but with totality, with presence, not just with talking to someone and thinking about something else, or, you know, like doing a task and really not being present or mindful with it. These are all leaking of energy. And to me, if you can get a small group of conscious community who can embrace those principles, which are very simple, then what results is a natural overflowing of abundance, happiness, joy, co-creativity. It just naturally flows because you're feeling connected, you are validated, you are seen, you are heard. All those things that basic, simple things that every human being yearns for, to be seen, to be validated, to be heard. These are very simple things, but so profound in their effect. And even people who've been heavily traumatized or who are heavily kind of handicapped by negative experiences can come out of that kind of prison and open up when they truly feel the presence of that reality in the room. They will then also have the courage to come out. And in the moment of being seen, then it eliminates all those years of psychotherapy and, you know, like having to go into psychoanalysis and work out about your problems and sort them out, what was going on with your mother or your father. It eliminates all of that. Because the end result of all of that psychoanalysis is ultimately, I accept myself as I am. But that can take 25, 30 years. I know people who've done psychoanalysis for that long and knew everything about their problems and their situations, but still had them. And in one night of the medicine, I've seen them drop the entire lot. So this is a completely different way of positioning yourself. You're not working out your problems and you're not trying to improve or fix yourself. You're simply accepting yourself on the deepest level possible. And once you love yourself on that level, then and only then do you have a chance or a possibility of extending that love truly to another, without it being a contract of, you know, love me and I'll love you, you know, kind of thing, which is the general contract that happens between people. Fill up my cup and I'll fill up your cup, you know, but it'll be an overflowing cup. And the overflowing cup doesn't come from some achievements or qualifications. It simply comes from deep acceptance of oneself. And I believe that if you can get that happening in small groups, people, as I believe the ayahuasca movement is doing and many other modalities as well, then that insinuates itself into the collective and is felt on that unconscious level by many, many more people than the actual people who are living it. And I believe that in the future, my vision of the future is that we'll all live together in conscious community. In other words, pods of no more than 200 or 300 people, where you can have maximum connection with all those people within the pod. Because beyond, I think it's 278 or 270, you don't have that full connection. Like we live in our society and we can know that person over there, but not really know them. So keeping people into the pods that are maximum connection, where the children are no longer the sole responsibility of two parents, but the responsibility of the pod, so that the children have many healthy examples of the masculine and the feminine to be influenced by, not just downloading the opinions and beliefs and prejudices of two people, and that pod embraces everything. And within that pod, you were given all things you need to be whole and sane and good. You've got food, shelter, connection, education, medicine, and all of this will be organized by a central organizing facility, which is not associated with power. It's not a president who's got more power than somebody else. It's simply a functional group who organize all of the basic functional things we need to have a good life. And then what follows after that, once the first basic things of survival, food, shelter, connections are satisfied, then what follows is a natural overflowing within the human being of seeking self-actualization. Most of the people on the planet cannot even entertain the notion of self-actualization because they're too busy trying to find food, they're too busy trying to find shelter or trying to, you know, pay the mortgage and keep up payments. So they never have time to think, what is my purpose? What is my gift? What is my ultimate unfolding? And so, and many people die on their deathbed thinking, shit, I just wasted a life. I've just been running around doing all this on the treadmill and I never really came to what was important. And so I believe that we've been stunted in our growth up until now. And it's a kind of like a childlike state. It's almost like we're coming out of the womb now. And we're coming into a kind of a reality, which is a multidimensional reality, where we embrace our multidimensional nature. And also we are given all the things we need to evolve in a healthy and normal way. And we won't even call it spiritual anymore. Spiritual is just a term we've invented because we've become so materially oriented. But people like the Aboriginal people, they never had a term spiritual. Every moment was spiritual. The thing they did was spiritual, but they never had a concept of spirituality. It was just natural. And I believe we're coming back to a natural state. And the natural state of a human being is to unfold through the journey of the chakras. Once you get to the heart and you're opening up the heart of compassion and having time for consideration of other beings as well as one's own survival and well-being, then it naturally overflows to wanting to share, wanting to give. There's a great joy from giving, which most people never discover because they feel that giving is part of a contract that you've got to get as well, and you're not really happy unless you get something in return. But when you're truly giving from your heart, it is its own reward. It's a joy in itself, and it's a really delicate joy, and it's a joy that is associated with lack of ego. It's a joy that comes from being committed to service to the one and all, to all beings, to the one and all, to the unified field, not out of just making sure that I'm okay. And this is the shift that we're happening. That's the parameters from this. It's a parameter of service to self, which is ego, to moving towards service to the one and all, which is less ego. We'll still have an ego, but the ego will be in line and subjugated to unfolding whatever spirit wants instead of what ego wants. Because ego in itself is not a bad word. It's just a tool, a creation through which we navigate 3D space-time. We need one. But it's just when we think we are the ego that the real problem happens. It's the attachment to that as self that is where the problem is. And so I believe that the growth is simply a growing up process. You could call it, an expansion of consciousness or a quantum leap, but it all sounds very cosmic and lovely. And in fact, it's true. But you could put it in more plain terms by saying it's a natural unfolding of the pathway of the energy of Kundalini through the chakra system in the body. And that once it's released and all of that first four chakras are fully satisfied and fulfilled, then naturally it wants to overflow into creativity, into insight, into true meaning of what life is truly about, into how can I interface in this incredibly precious moment of now to assist my brothers and sisters and all of creation. This is a noble feeling, and these noble feelings are very subtle and cannot be experienced while you're busy battling with the first three or four chakras or trying to fulfill them. And so that's why the whole notion of debt on this planet is a diabolical black magic spell on human consciousness, because you're never out of debt and you're always running on that treadmill. And it's designed specifically and intentionally to keep you locked in those first three or four chakras. And the fourth chakra, just for the love of your family and your friends, not for the love of mankind or for the love of existence or creation. It's still limited to the self. So I believe this natural unfolding is happening of its own accord, and that all the kind of the diabolical agenda that we see being played out is an attempt to arrest that natural unfolding, which is unfolding in all human beings. And if we continue, that's what will happen. And so in these little template of having millions or thousands of these conscious communities, which are no more than, say, 300 people, you know, there's great freedom within that, because there'd be nobody telling you what to do. Each pod decides for themselves how they want to live, what the dynamics of how they interface with reality will be. And then if a child grows up and goes, oh, I'm finished with this pod, I actually want to go and hang out with the mystics or the scientists or the reggae dudes or the music, then you simply change pods and go to a pod where that's the reality. And you can end your development, education, go through many different pods. And each of these pods is transparent, open, affirming the one and all, affirming the service to self. And then in that gifting process of just the unfolding of energy, of wanting to gift your personal gift, whatever that may be, to the world, then we will birth a world that is unlimited in its abundance. That will be, we can't even imagine it right now because we're still in the spell of that, you know, debt-ridden money world. But once we're released from that spell and awakened to our true divine nature, then we will be, it'll be plain as day. It'll be as plain as sunlight that why didn't we see this before? It's so obvious and it's so natural. It's the natural unfolding of human beings. Whereas in our historical process, our DNA, our kundalini, our energy, our basic unfolding has been fucked with. It's been diverted and changed and distorted by erroneous belief systems, by concepts, by, you know, money systems, by ownership, by jealousy, all these base emotions which have actually been promoted on this planet in one way or another. We are about to transcend that big time. And that's so exciting to me. And I just feel that it's a given thing. No matter what pressures these people are bringing to bear, I don't think they'll ever stop that tide. That's my, at least within my vision, that's how I'm seeing it. I'm not saying that I'm the arbiter of everything, but in my reality, that's where I'm working from. And I believe that we are all creators of our own reality. So I intend to manifest mine clearly and succinctly on this planet with and co-create that with brothers and sisters of like mind, of people of like mind. And, you know, and that can happen all over the world, like we're speaking to each other now. It's, you know, I've just met you, but I feel in the sparkle of your eye, a kindred soul. I know that to be true. And I know that indubitably, even though I know nothing about you. You know what I mean? It's about frequency. I feel the frequency. And what we're experiencing is a shift in frequency. And this frequency is what it's all about. It's not about beliefs or about, yeah, when you move to that new frequency, a lot of those beliefs and rules and regulations, the very need for them will fall away of their own accord. Just as I said, if you kill the taproot of fear of death, then all the other fears will naturally fall away. Similarly, in this case with that, all those old beliefs, erroneous systems are no longer useful. They're past the use-by date. You don't even have to judge them. It was necessary in our development to bring us to this point. But now it's no longer useful. We need to let go of it and not cling to them like limpets, as many people are doing desperately right now. But that will change and is changing as we speak.
I'm sure the symmetry between this conscious community that you speak of and our indigenous tribes is not lost on you, because really to me, when I hear you say this, we're going back to the way it was, where the village would raise the children in the small tribal communities, the same communities that we have spoke of, that really the people in power and who are greed and fear motivated have done a very good job of destroying. And it's time to rebuild that in one way or another. And I think it's incredible what your vision is, what your hope is. I'm grateful that there are people like you who are trying to make these things happen. What is the opportunity for someone to work with you, Darpan, and help co-create this new vision?
Well, we're currently working on a number of different things. I mean, I run, you know, up until COVID hit, I was, you know, traveling the globe doing sound healing seminars, you know, shamanic retreats, and concerts, and various other things, you know, with groups of people. And that I did for like 14, 15 years, just traveling pretty much mostly Europe, like one end of Europe to the other, every country. We've got communities in every country. And so that's been my way up until now, is to just be very hands-on. Like literally, I must have given the medicine to thousands and thousands of people. And so that's one way of awakening. But I feel that what the medicine is now downloading to me now is that job for me has been done. My time on the shop floor, so to speak, literally giving the ambrosia to people and traveling around, being a disciple or apostle, if you like, for ayahuasca. My next phase that I'm going into is more, I want to spend more time writing and recording, and I want to develop a good online community, which already is growing, in the sense of the medicine's telling me that there are many, many people, in fact, a much larger demographic than are actually drinking the medicine, who are really interested in the frequency surrounding the medicine, but are not ready to actually sit down and drink it. And I do feel that there's a large, large majority there of that, because I was doing a speaking tour through West Coast America in 2013, and it was a music/speaking tour. A lot of the feedback I used to get from the talks were that, I've never drunk ayahuasca, but I really feel like I've experienced somewhat of it through your talk. And so the medicine wants me to speak more. Up until now, I've been very quiet because I haven't wanted to endanger my clients. I don't want people to, I don't want to wave a big flag and draw the authorities onto the work that we were doing. So I spoke very little outside of the context of the ayahuasca ceremony. But now I'd like to write. I want to write books. We're working on a course, an online course for people to do, which is all to do with this kind of topics and subject matter that we've been discussing in this podcast, but in practical ways. I would like to speak now. I'm going to come down. I will always do retreats here on my land. Very fortunate to have this beautiful property here called Satchamama Sanctuary, which is pure rainforest. It's raining buckets right now as we speak. And we've got a pure river running down. It's absolutely pure, pristine water. And it's absolutely brilliant space, which is perfect for the work that we've been doing. So that will always continue here. But I don't think I'll be on the road doing this as I've been doing for the last 25 years or so. But I will be back on the road speaking as we're doing now, talking. In other words, generating and sharing the frequency that has been inducted into me by the medicine on that level, so that people can feel that frequency. And then if they want to drink the medicine, great. But if not, that's fine. But at least enter into that frequency, because it's not per se that everybody needs to drink ayahuasca, because we're working for the collective when we drink medicine. Sometimes when we purge, and I'm sure you may have experienced this yourself, you're not just purging for yourself, you're purging for humanity. You're purging for all of the trauma and the hurt and the pain that's been happening, that's been perpetrated on this planet. So in that way, it's a transpersonal kind of offering as well as a personal one. It's very much that. And I feel that affecting the collective consciousness in a kind of a transpersonal way by introducing this frequency, because I really believe that having worked with the medicine all these years, it becomes incumbent upon you, or at least one feels the urge to share this frequency. And it's about not just about getting people to drink ayahuasca, it's about generating that frequency in oneself, living that frequency. And by living that frequency, we inspire and catalyze other people to also live that frequency. Because just as fear is a virus and highly contagious, so is love, just as contagious. And so we're working with that virus, if you like, the virus of love. And that when I say love, I don't mean that in a facile way. I just mean, when I mean love, I mean love for all beings, for existence, for creation, and most of all, love for oneself. Not in a personal, selfish way, but as a way of embracing existence, of reality, this moment, here and now, and how precious this moment is, how wonderful, how gifted we are to even be here, to be even having this discussion. It's just wonderful, when you look at it, really from that transpersonal way. And so it's about embracing our transpersonal truth and embedding that within, so it's congruent with your personal truth. But it doesn't have to eliminate the personal truth, it just becomes part thereof. So to me, that's the next stage of the work, however I can do that. It's still not yet clear how that is, because as I said, I don't plan anything. I just wait for existence to give me the next step, or for the medicine, if you like, to give me the next step. And these are the steps that have evolved so far. I will always be doing the medicine. I will always be giving it to people, but my mobility around and the kind of intensity with which I was doing that is going to change in favor of reaching a much larger demographic through sharing this frequency that the medicine has inducted me with. So that's all. I just see it as a shift, a phase shift, but my energy will be no less. You know, until the day I die, I'll be working to assist the birthing of heaven on earth and to ingressing those higher frequencies, so that it's a finite reality here on this planet. And I totally see that that's doable. I wouldn't do it otherwise if I thought it wasn't possible. I absolutely see it's possible, even though all evidence appears to the contrary right now. But that's just a passing thing. And there is lots of evidence to show that people are actually waking up, and that intelligent people are no longer acquiescing to that which they know is wrong. I mean, for example, there's so many doctors out there who know that this is all bullshit, but won't say so because they're afraid of losing their jobs, their family, and being criticized. And so people are still acquiescing, even though they know it's not right. And so many people like that, I think there's a huge amount of people like that. They just need a little shift, a little help, a little insight to come from that camp of being acquiescing to actually going, fuck this, no, this is bullshit. And what can we create together? What can we co-create together? Because as much as they're pushing an agenda right now over which we have no say or participation in whether or not we want this agenda, if that was to fail and fall apart, imagine the incredible minds, the co-creative beings out there who could come up instantly, and I'm sure they're already there, with brand new templates for how existence and society can be. I mean, I just very barely laid out the bones of how I see it, and I can go into that with much greater detail. But the thing is, there are so many new modalities wanting to be birthed right now. It's concomitant with this whole shift of consciousness that we're part of, that you're a part of, I'm a part of. This very podcast will affect other people. So everything we do is gifted towards that cause. And, you know, as you know, one stone in a pond, and the ripples can go out very, very wide. So I have to thank you for doing these podcasts with these amazing people that you have been doing them with, because it's a very clear and finite way of affecting the collective in a very, you know, proactive way. So I really want to honor you for that.
Well, thank you. It's all my pleasure doing so. It's been an amazing experience, and getting to meet the likes of you and Dan Reed and so many, all the other guests who I've had. It's been a tremendous learning experience for me, and in ways has far exceeded any expectations I ever had of doing the podcast. Just the personal connection alone has made it worth it 10 times over. You're a beautiful man, Darpan, doing beautiful work. Thank you. Do you want to send listeners to any website or any particular place so they can learn more about you and your work?
Well, I do have a website. It's darpan.com. That's still in the process of being built right now, but you can still go there. There are pages already up because we're just reshaping, reforming it. And apart from that, I mean, people can access my music. I have about 5 CDs that are available on, of course, Spotify or iTunes, under my name, Darpan. And also, there's several albums, Love Light, Fly Away, Body of Light, Temple of Glowing Sound. So the music is a really big thing. I don't know if you're familiar with my music. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not, no, but I will.
Okay, well then I invite you to look on YouTube also, under my name, and there are various spoken word pieces as well as the songs that I've written, which have been gathering quite a bit of interest. One of them's called A New Vision, which is like an 8-9 minute piece, which covers kind of the themes that we've been talking about today with music, which has been very powerful. And also there are many others. There's on my Love Light album, there's a thing called Metamorphosis, where I extrapolate upon that image I touched upon from the caterpillar to butterfly in kind of poetic ways. And so there's the songs that I do and also the spoken word pieces that I do. I've collaborated with people like, Liquid Bloom. I don't know if you know them. They're from that band.
No.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's not important. But you can find them on YouTube. And I encourage you to do that. And I can even send you some yourself because you may not find some of them. And apart from that, Instagram. I have an Instagram account, much as I don't like Instagram, their account there. And we do a lot of posts there. And that's a fun way to connect with people, even though I kind of am very suspicious about the application itself. It's a very finite way that we keep contact with a lot of different people. And so we post a lot of stuff on that. My Instagram account is DAR_PAN369.
Okay. Well, I'll put that, your website, and your YouTube links into the show notes for listeners to find. I have like a gazillion questions that I could ask you, so many different directions we could go, but we're 2.5 hours in, so I'm going to let you go for now. But yeah. I am such deep gratitude to you for your generosity in doing this with me, and also for the generosity that you put out into the world. It's incredibly needed, and thank you for doing that, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Todd. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Salish Wolf with Darpan. For the first part of this conversation, please check out episode 37. If you want to learn more about Darpan, visit his website, darpan.com. That's DARPAN.com. You can also follow him on Instagram at DAR_PAN369. Please check out angerpointexpeditions.com for information on my men's leadership retreats and personal development coaching. Stay tuned for the announcement of 2021 retreats, during which I take men on purpose-driven adventures along British Columbia's Wild Coast. My next bow carving retreats are taking shape as early as September. This show was produced by me, Todd Howard, on Vancouver Island. Music was written and performed by Jason Kouse of the Darcys. Special thanks to Pacific Rim College for their ongoing contribution to the show. For episodes on holistic health and sustainability, please tune in to my other podcast, Pacific Rim College Radio, at pacificrimcollege.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give it a 5-star rating on whatever podcast app you are using and share it with your friends and family. If there is a guest you would like to recommend for the show, please email discover@anchorpointexpeditions.com. You have been listening to Salish Wolf. I am Todd Howard, signing off.